It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 17 years ago, the Citizen Police Review Board was created. It was mandated by a public referendum in the wake of the death of Johnny Gamage, a black motorist who died at the hands of suburban police inside city limits. In the years since, the CPRB's effectiveness has been called into question, and elected officials haven't helped, for example, routinely ignoring the responsibility to appoint members to the CPRB. What will the election of a new mayor and city council president do to change that? I'm joined now in studio by Beth Pittenger, the board's longtime executive director. Beth Pittenger, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
And if you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, our number, 412-246-2002. What do you think needs to be done, if anything, to strengthen the role of the CPRB, the Citizen Police Review Board, in Pittsburgh? Beth Pittenger, Mayor Peduto, and City Council President Bruce Krause have not taken action on three current vacancies on your board. As a result, your agency was unable to meet a quorum or conduct business at its February 25th meeting, for example. Why haven't these vacancies been filled? What are you asking yourself about this?
Well, I'm not asking myself or our board anything about it. We provided the appropriate and the legally required notices to the mayor, but we have to go back to the former administration of Ravenstahl. Those seats that were coming due for term expirations, his administration and council were notified 6 months in advance of the terms expiring. And so we had expected appointments to have been made by September, and that didn't occur. And of course, then we had a transition. So we notified the incoming administration of the retention of three of the members whose terms would have expired October 31st. But if you recall, way back in 2010, Luke Ravenstahl wiped out the board on a political whim. And as a result, we were faced with evaluating the terms of the ordinance, and it was rewritten. So that today, if a term expires or there's a vacancy, there are remedies in place. And in this instance, on October 31st, the terms expired. Nobody was succeeded by appointment as of December 1st. So 30 days had elapsed, and they were automatically retained in their seats as though having been newly appointed to a four-year term. But then what happened was individuals moved. They relocated and were disqualified from continuing at the board, which created the two city council vacancies. The mayor has one law enforcement seat open since it's a year this month, actually. So that one could have been appointed by Ravenstahl or now by Peduto at their discretion, and it hasn't been done. So we did send a new notification giving them the benefit of the doubt as incoming, and that would have had appointments made by February 9th, and that did not occur. Now, what we understand is that council is working on a nominating resolution. They have to submit three names per empty seat to the mayor for selection of one. So they have to come up with six names in total, and hopefully they will. Council President Krause has assured us they're working on it. And the mayor's office has not indicated whether or not they're ready to appoint someone to the vacant law enforcement seat, although he did make a number of appointments earlier this week to other boards and authorities. So we're hopeful that it'll be taken care of in the next month.
Now, if the deadline, and it might be confusing for people to keep everything straight because we're talking about all sorts of deadlines here that have been, in some cases, amended. If the deadline now was February 9th, is there still a possibility of filling any of the vacancies this year?
Oh, yes. They can do it. Council can submit their nominating resolution to the mayor at any time. And those seats remain open, so they need to be filled, and that's their obligation under the law to do so. The mayor, we would expect to move on the law enforcement seat sooner rather than later because it has been open for a year, and that's a very critical position on the board because it presents a law enforcement perspective that's very important for evaluating the cases that the board reviews.
How has this impacted the board's effectiveness?
Well, we have four sitting members, and we do require each of them to be present so that we have a quorum so they can do official business. And in February, unfortunately, one of our members, her mom passed away that day. So she was not able to come to the meeting, obviously. But as a result, we only had three members available. So there was no quorum formed. Had there been other members, then perhaps we could have made the quorum. So that's how that it becomes disruptive. Otherwise, it's very burdensome on those remaining members because they have to attend every meeting to get their work accomplished. The effectiveness, no. I mean, with the exception of that, that meeting quorum requirement that can be difficult, they have a public hearing in process now going through the preparations for a public hearing. There are three members who will sit on a panel. That is the tradition. There are three members on each hearing panel. And there is a pending case now that we had a pre-hearing conference on that in February. That went forward because the three members were available. They have findings and recommendations to issue on March 25th, the date of their next meeting, which will actually be over here in Southside at the Chamber of Commerce. And that is in the case of Henderson versus Gromick. You recall the teacher in June who had an encounter with Officer Gromick following a meeting in Homewood. They heard that, and they have their findings and recommendations to release on Tuesday.
Coming Tuesday?
Yes.
Well, you know, that is a situation that just speaks to the tension that exists in this city. And there's a lot of tension between the police and African-American citizens. And this last incident that you mentioned, this was an African-American teacher. First of all, let me ask you this. Had that man been white, would we even be having this conversation now? Do you think?
Well, that would just be pure speculation.
What do you think?
But I think that, frankly, we do have a continuing tension in the communities that are predominantly occupied by African Americans and the police department. There are a lot of reasons for that. Looking back over the last 4-5 years, look at the turmoil that we've endured in relations between the police and the community. We had officers that were killed. We had the Jordan Miles incident. We had Leon Ford's incident. We had the Henderson incident. We've had a number of, we've had the corruption problem within the Bureau. We have questions about those employees of the Bureau of Police that remain today on administrative leave, paid leave, for a year now. There's been no resolve to that. We have questions about a current police commander and a police sergeant who were involved in a business in interest with the former chief of police. We have an awful lot that has transpired and I think have conspired to further undermine relationships of trust with the Bureau of Police. So that becomes a very big administrative problem. We then also have the issue of the young police department. A lot of rookie officers that are, because of the union, allowed or are assigned duty assignments within particularly Zone 5, the Homewood area. And these are officers who lack experience simply because they just came on the job. And they're dealing with situations that they're otherwise, they're pretty naive about in some senses. And they're also not, they don't have the benefit of the mentoring of veteran officers who are also in that zone. Because of seniority, those officers opt out and take assignments in other zones across the city. So Zone 5 is particularly vulnerable to escalated and incidents that turn into something that maybe they otherwise wouldn't.
We're talking with Beth Pittenger. She is the executive director of the Citizen Police Review Board. If you have a comment or question, if you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. As I listen to you speak here, Beth, and as our listeners listen to what you have to say, clearly there is feedback that the CPRB can provide, very meaningful feedback to city officials, to the police. And yet you've been marginalized. Now, you've talked about the previous administration, so now we have a new mayor, a new city council. And despite this lack of appointments to make to get your board really up and running and able to do some things, are there any signs at this point that a real change is about to take place? And if so, what are they?
Now, that's a very strange feeling right now because
– It must be.
It is very strange. It's a mayor now who has always been an ally of the board, has always respected and fully understood the board's independence. He was chief of staff to the council person who wrote the ordinance that enabled the board back in 98. So he has been with this board, at least having knowledge of it personally, since its very inception. And key to that is he recognizes and understands the concept of an independent board. We have a new city solicitor who was formerly a CPRB solicitor, Lourdes Sanchez Rich. We also have a new director over at the Office of Municipal Investigation, Deborah Walker, who is a former chair of our board. So this situation, this all these people who now are in positions of power and policy-making decisions, they have an opportunity to create an environment where this board can actually do what it was supposed to do. So we might finally find out how does it work. We may not have to have – it's a very weird place to be. After 17 years, you end up like, somebody understands the quasi-nature of the board, quasi-civil, quasi-criminal, quasi-administrative. They understand that we understand our mission is based on remaining independent and being objective and impartial to guarantee that civilians, citizens of the city, and visitors to the city have an opportunity – to express a concern about an encounter they had with City of Pittsburgh police officers. Similarly, and equally so, it's important that police officers' conduct is judged and evaluated in a fair and impartial manner. So it's a fine line that we walk, and now we actually have people in positions that understand what that line is all about. We're hopeful that we'll be able to work with OMI, which has traditionally been an obstruction in our ability to do our work, that we're looking at the common mission, the common goal that both offices have, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to create some collaboration and work towards enhancing the quality of outcome both offices produce.
It's been said that the review board would be better served by reviewing larger policy issues rather than investigating specific allegations. What do you think?
We do that. We do that regularly. The board has conducted public hearings on a number of systemic police policy issues.
So where is that criticism coming from? Why?
I think it there's some people out there that believe the individual complaints of police misconduct are only appropriately handled internally, that nobody outside of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police should be looking and judging a police officer's conduct.
And this would presumably be coming from the Fraternal Order of Police?
From the FOP, from police officers themselves, from people who believe that police, can conduct their business with impunity. Obviously, that didn't work. The electorate created this board. They delegated the review to this board. And within that mission, within the charter provision, the board does have the authority to review policy problems, and they do. They issued recommendations immediately after the Cassandra Wade incident last year related to domestic violence responses.
Was that a Zone 5 incident?
Yes. Yes, it was. They have issued recommendations on 99 cars, which are the plainclothes vehicles right now known in the relationship to the Jordan Miles case. They've issued recommendations on the requirements for individuals to apply to be a police officer, education requirements. They've conducted public hearings and issued recommendations on motor vehicle pursuits. They do look at the major policy issues, but I think that fundamentally, when you hear that kind of a criticism, Paul, it's more an expression of frustration that some of the systemic corruptions and the instruments of that corruption have been permitted to continue for so many years and through so many administrations that it has become a very, very well-coordinated administrative tool to control what people know about whatever incident it may be. And then the favoritism that we've experienced over the years with different police chiefs and executive branch officials, where the favorite have been protected and those that they want to, quote, get, they can get. And so that kind of systemic problem, I think, is history now. There's value to exposing it so we can learn from it. You know, history teaches us about the future. We have to pay attention to it. But I think that's more the essence of that criticism than looking at the operational policies and procedures, because there's been a great deal of frustration from police officers that I've heard related to the kind of selective management that they've experienced.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you would like to join the conversation with Beth Pittenger. She is Executive Director of the Citizen Police Review Board. Again, 412-246-2002 in the remaining time that we have with her. And I don't want you to have to relive too much of the past, but talking about past administrations, former Mayor Luke Ravenstahl's approach to the board, and you got into it to some extent, but it has been described by others outside of the CPRB as hostile and sometimes ferocious. Can you give us an example?
Well, it wasn't our most affectionate relationship. It was not pretty. Probably most of that came during the questioning of the G20 here in the city. The board wanted to conduct a comprehensive review of the practices that were in place, the use of the LRAD, the incidents that happened out at Pitt.
And these were things involving the police and protesters.
That's correct. And how the Pittsburgh police deputized all the other departments that were here in town, how they were managed, just what happened, and what can we learn from it. And as the board pursued that, and they issued subpoenas, they sought documents, they sought reports from the administration, the insurance company that was engaged to insure the city for incidents related to G20, they stepped in, and they meddled in the whole thing. They confronted the board and expressed their disagreement that there was any role for the board. It was beyond their jurisdiction. Therefore, we had to go away, and we couldn't look at anything, and we didn't have any power to look at anything. We ended up in litigation. That pretty much sealed the deal in terms of any working relationship with that administration. And that was when we were in front of Judge Wettick on June 18th of 2010. We came out of a court argument, and the media asked the question, how do you respond to the news that Mayor Ravenstahl has replaced 5 of the 7 board members? Now, all I could do was laugh and say, who didn't know that was coming? It was purely political. It was whimsical. And it amplified how boards and authorities can be manipulated at the political will of the mayor.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Cecily in Penn Hills. Cecily, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. My question is, if we continue down this path of basically this racial divide that we have in our communities between the police and the community, what is our future going to look like? Because obviously there is a lack of respect on the behalf of the police, you know, looking at how they deal with the community. And so I wanted to kind of understand what we can do, because, I mean, the Police Review Board does a lot of great work, but what else can be done?
Well, it's a very, very broad question, and I think it goes to the core of the culture here in the city of Pittsburgh. The disrespect, I can honestly say, seems to me to be from both sides. It's a mutual problem that we have to resolve. And there are some efforts underway with the Bureau, and I think you'll find that in some of the local the zones, at the zone level, where officers and civilians are getting along with a much better relationship. But the encounters are where we run into trouble. Some of it is police training. Some of it is the lack of experience of many of the officers that are out there. But we also have to go all the way back into the school district, I think, and start working with kids to develop their sense of responsible citizenship and respect for those people in the community that are there to protect and keep people safe, which could be not just police officers, but you also have other emergency workers that have to come into communities that are and they're received in a hostile manner. It's also important that the civilians who have information about incidents have a means of conveying that information to police officers in a safe way, because the police are cognizant that, you know, the no snitching business that goes on the street, the risk to people who convey information that leads to the arrest of someone, the danger it puts people in. And the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police has made a real effort to provide a safe way for civilians to do that. And if anybody has information they want to pass on to the police, they can even convey it to us and we will get them connected.
Well, thank you, Cecily, for your good question. We are running out of time, but there were two more things I really wanted to touch on with you, Beth Pittenger. One is, what kind of role do you hope to play in the selection of a new police chief?
Well, we haven't had any discussion with the administration about that process yet, but it would certainly be my expectation that the mayor would reach out to the board and ask for some recommendations and advice in terms of the characteristics that one should be looking for a new chief of police in the city.
And finally, what are your thoughts on members of the Pittsburgh police not having to live within the city limits? Certainly an issue that's been in the news a lot lately.
Oh, that's a historic problem, isn't it? I think the voters spoke to that in November, and it's the will of the people of the city of Pittsburgh that we live in the city of Pittsburgh if we work for the city of Pittsburgh. There are some valid points on the police side of this matter, though. Personal safety, family safety, you know, you can go a couple years back and recall where there were demonstrations at an officer's private home, which, you know, frightened his wife, his children, and his neighbors. And at that time, you know, we said, look, you know, private retaliation for public acts is not okay. You know, let's take this out of the back to the public arena. And if someone did something as a result of their public position, hold them accountable in public. Don't go in and bring other people and expose other people to the consequences of a public act. And some of the officers do have valid concerns. But I think as a policy, the people have spoken, and that's where the mayor has filed an appeal of that decision to the Court of Common Pleas, and we'll see what the courts rule.
Beth Pittenger is the executive director of the Citizen Police Review Board. She joined us in Studio A. Beth, thanks for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, Capitol reporter Mary Wilson on the firearms-related bills before the State House. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.